Good question. Priorities within Stucker has a fascinating aspect to it. It's a unique area of halakha that, on the one hand, that you have absolutely have halakhic principles, as you probably got to see a little bit this morning. There's a section in Shulchan Aruch that is dedicated to this. There are Sfarim that are dedicated to this. There are Gemaras, some of which are on our daf, some of which are elsewhere, that are relevant to this. To say that Staka is my money and I can do whatever I want with it is not a true statement. There clearly are halachic values that are very much relevant, but at the same time, they're not absolute. And I think we mentioned last week when talking about the pasuk of Lo sikpot zes yadcha, you shouldn't clench your hand, so the Vilna Gaon has a comment that the idea is that when you close your hand, when you close your hand, the fist looks like the fingers are all the same size. And when you open it up, you see that it's not true. You see the fingers aren't the same size. You see that life's much more complicated than it looks. And that's the case here, that Stucker, we can talk about rules, but at the same time, when it comes to real life, the rules are very hard to actually apply. We don't know how to weigh up all the different variables. So then it flips to the other side, that it is your discretion. It is a matter of a personal decision. So here we have kind of an unusual balance, that on the one hand, it is an area where you make decisions, you do what is right for you. On the other hand, it's not hefker, it's not that you just decide whatever you want when you get up in the morning. There are clear halachic principles that influence the decision. So what we're talking about is really an unusual area of halacha, that's the way it's dictated. It's an area which is, on the one hand, discretionary, but the discretion is an informed discretion. It's a discretion that's not supposed to be random, just whatever you feel like, but a discretion that is based on halachic principles that then manifest themselves through decisions that you make. And, of course, we also have the concept of a rabbinic discretionary fund, and that kind of reflects this idea as well, the notion that people give tzedakah by giving it through the rabbinic discretionary fund. So the notion is that, on the one hand, it's discretionary. There are decisions that are made that are going to vary from person to person. But that we're interested in the rabbinic discretion. We're interested in the discretion that's informed by the rabbinic sources. So that's a different kind of discretion. And it's also the case that it's not just about in terms of the different ways in which you may interpret the data, but different people have different priorities. And as we'll also see, that's a crucial part of the puzzle, because part of how it works, that hopefully in an ideal world, all the aniyim and all the different causes will be attended to, is through the fact that two people don't necessarily have the same priorities. So two people next to each other may have different reasons to give to different people and to different causes, and the hope is that with all that, with all these differences, so all the aniyim and all the causes of the world will get taken care of. Obviously that's a messianic vision to say that everyone will be taken care of, but the goal is that everybody will be attended to. And part of how that happens is because the two different people asking the shayla are not going to get the same answer. They don't have the same factors to weigh, and that's also a big part of it. So the first question to talk about is one, like I said, that flows directly from what we talked about last week. So how would you address the following issue? So let's say, theoretically, the money you have happens to be limited. If you can imagine such a thing. You can imagine that you actually don't have infinite money. And obviously, by the way, you don't have infinite money, you don't have infinite time either. You know, maybe when you're college students, you're more aware of the fact that your time is limited than that your money is limited. So the principles that we're going to talk about are probably largely relevant to chesed decisions also. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Sefer Avos Chesed, that we have principles that are brought in the Sfarim that are really about Staka, but Hasfar and Osenes, that they probably apply to Chesed as well. The decisions that we make in terms of how we will allot our time are probably parallel, he assumes, to the way we make decisions about how we will allot our money. That we don't have such clear statements. We have a few, we'll discuss a few, but for the most part, the statements about prioritizing are in the context of Staka. But, as we discussed last week, they're linked mitzvos. They're not the same, but they're linked. And it makes sense that the similar systems are probably at play. So it's probably a useful model to try to figure out how you make the decisions about spending your time. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva We were talking before about the concept of Meiser. It's not necessarily our topic for today, maybe we'll come back to it a different day, but the topic of Meiser Ksafim, of donating 10% of your money to tzedakah, so you might be familiar that Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says the same thing about your time, that it's appropriate to spend 10% of your time devoted towards helping others. So clearly there's a lot of parallels one could draw between tzedakah and how we give out of our money, and chesed, how we give of our time. So it makes sense to think of the two in sync, to think of the two in parallel. What's also interesting is that if we define chesed as mitzvahs that you do with your body, with your time, with yourself, and tzedakah as mitzvahs that you do with your money, so there are a few hybrid categories. So one hybrid category, for example, is hachnasas orchin. Hachnasas orchin is a particular chesed which really involves both, and that's a whole separate discussion. I could say a lot about hachnasas orchin, which is not our topic, but it just illustrates the point that that's a chesed which really is a mitzvah shebegufo. It's that you pay attention to the person and you spend time with the person and you make them welcome. So that's a chesed more in the physical sense. But if you're feeding them, so it could cost a lot of money. It could be that you're hosting aniyim. It could be that you're providing food to somebody who's otherwise starving. So hachnasas orchin is an interesting hybrid category where really it's both about chesed shebegufo and chesed shebemono at the same time. But another hybrid category which is particularly relevant to today's discussion is there is a particular category of chesed which involves the word tzedakah, but it's really a chesed shebegufo, and that is the gabbai tzedakah. So there is a tremendous chus that's associated with somebody who will devote his time, rather than his money, to the practice of tzedakah. So if somebody is involved in the collecting of tzedakah, in the disbursement of tzedakah, or nowadays, so we have a whole industry, we have a whole institutions that are devoted to the very complex and broad-based application of tzedakah in a elaborate type of fashion, so you can have many people whose full-time employment is within such a structure. So that's also broadly within this heading of the gabbai tzedakah. The gabbai tzedakah has its own very fascinating regulations, which could also be a topic for a different time. But today, just also to keep in mind and think that when we prioritize how to give tzedakah, so there's two different tracks you could be asking on. You could be somebody who wants to know, how do you give the tzedakah that you have to give personally? You have your own income that you want to give the tzedakah from. Or what if you are administering tzedakah that was given by others? You know, what if you are in charge of a fund that, whether you're a paid employee or not a paid employee, there are some differences in halacha, but for now we'll treat them both the same. So what if you have a fund that you are in charge of? It's your job to give out money that was donated by others. How do you make decisions as far as that's concerned? And we'll see there are some places where there's a difference. It makes a difference whether it's your money or whether it's somebody else's money. And that's also an interesting point to highlight. So let's start with this question. So you have a limited amount of money. So you have the following question. I could give the money in two different ways. Let's just say I already decided I'm giving it to the poor. I already decided that. But either I could give all of my money to one ani and make a pretty significant difference in his life, at least for now, or I could divide the money up and give it to more aniyim and make a smaller difference in their lives, but do it for more people. And for the sake of the discussion, let's assume that you're not diluting it so much that it's not helping anybody. You're not going to give such small gifts that nobody's going to benefit at all. The question is, in a more reasonable sense, giving a small benefit to a larger number of people, or concentrating that all towards one recipient, so that person gets a very significant benefit, even though others don't get anything. So what would you choose to do? What's the best approach to take? Have any thoughts? Ben?
Give to a lot of people.
Give to a lot of people. Okay, how would you explain that position? Would you, is there a reason?
Yeah, because it'll be a habit for you to give to a lot of people, and it'll encourage you to do more and more.
Okay, so you're saying, so that sentence contains many different aspects to it. So you're saying that ultimately it will create more tzedakah, because once you do it a number of times, you'll become habituated. So that could be. Anyone else want to comment on that? Who in this farm? Yeah, Avi?
Oh, so you're helping more people.
Helping more people.
Yeah.
So essentially you're assuming that that's a bigger priority than helping one person more, which might be true. Okay. Anyone else?
If you learn from the pasuk, mm-hmm. it seems like you're fulfilling that pasuk, more by giving to more people, right? Instead of helping, like fulfilling it to one person, you're fulfilling it to many people, right?
That's a fascinating suggestion. I don't know if it's mukhra, but I don't know if that's inherently provable from the sentence. But basically, what you're interpreting is that the Torah says you should love your reyim. That's kind of really what it means. So the more reyim you love, the greater fulfillment of that mitzvah. And that if there was a point in that pasuk to adjust, that it's not the ahava part, it's the reyecha part. That if I could increase the volume on the reyecha, then that's a greater accomplishment than increasing the volume on the ahava. Which is interesting. I think there's definitely room to try to figure out what is the main thrust of the pasuk. You can get very hyper-lovish about it and say, is it the Torah wants you to love people, and the more people you love, the better? Or is the Torah wants you to love people, and the more that you love somebody, the more? Is the mitzvah and the love of the mitzvah? I can get very brisker about it, but I don't know if there's necessarily evidence from the pasuk this one way or the other, but it's an interesting question to ask. Avi up first, Michael.
Are you fulfilling Dei Machzor for all the people you give?
So we haven't even gotten up to Dei Machzor yet. So, but to preliminarily address that question, let's assume that you're not even close. Right? As we get into Dei Machzor, we'll have to address the fact that it's very challenging to imagine you're ever going to do Dei Machzor for anybody in terms of the practicalities that we've seen from the Gemara and that's involved. Let's assume for now for sure not. That's way beyond our capabilities. I think Michael was up and then Tamir.
Mr. Rambam and Avot, who says that it's greater to give tzedakah many times than to give it in one bowl.
Ah, okay, so you got to see the Rambam, right? The Rambam, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, the Rambam takes a stand on this, which says something which is similar to what Ben says. I'm not sure if the point's exactly the same. But essentially, what the Rambam says in his commentary to Pirkei Avos is he's discussing a sentence that the Mishnah says, Hakol lefi rov hamaseh, that everything is assessed based on the rov of the action. So he comments, what does that mean, the rov of the action? He says there's a difference between rov and, let's say, godel. If we would have said that everything is judged based on the godel hamaseh, that would mean everything's assessed based on the magnitude. We like big things. We look for things to be very impressive in and of themselves. And Mishnah saying, no, that's not the point. The point is we look for the multitude of the action. We'd rather have an action repeated, even if it's smaller, than have an action that is a one-time, one-hit wonder and very impressive and doesn't reflect a constant pattern. So then, to give an example of that, the Rambam says exactly our situation, that if one has a limited amount of money to give, it's better that he should give the same amount of money in smaller increments rather than one large gift, because in doing so, he will make a greater impact on his personality. That this is an action that will have, every action of giving is going to make him more generous by nature, and that's valuable. So better he should write a check out 10 times rather than once, even if it's 10 checks that all add up to the same number that one check would have been, but still better he should do it this way. Every time he writes that check, that's an act of giving, and that's going to have an impact on his personality. Now, Ben interpreted that to mean, I don't know if you were interpreting the Rambam, if you were suggesting your own, that that's good because ultimately the benefit will be more because it'll end up being more tzedakah. That could be. I don't know if that's necessarily the has to be a conclusion. It could be that simply the impact that tzedakah has on his personality will be greater because of that, and that's valuable in and of itself. Tamir, did you want to say a little comment to that? You want to say? Okay. So, yes, sir?
If we look at it from the perspective of imitatio Dei, mm-hmm. then the act of giving is an imitation of God.
Right.
So that would be the advantage of it, but not necessarily to, or do chesed for the other person, perhaps the Baha'u'llah Lerecha Kamacha would be impacted by giving less.
Okay, so let's consider that point. Right, so, is there anyone who disagrees with the Rambam? Or is there a position to take different from the Rambam? So just parenthetically, there are those, I didn't put this in the Narma Komos, there are those who disagree with the general point and who say that, no, it is better to give one big gift that's going to have a greater impact than many small gifts. So, for example, the Maharal of Prague and Yaakov Emden, in one of his farim, take this position. But the Rambam's position is a little bit more widely accepted. But there is a different nuance, that there is another source, if you got a chance to see this, which also says to diversify, also says to give many smaller gifts, but I think for a different reason. Who's that? The Bach. Now, what does the Bach say? You don't get a chance to see that. The Bach, we're a little bit ahead of the game, but the Bach is in Hilchos Purim. This is coming up in six weeks. The Bach says also that you should diversify, but he has a different focus. Because essentially, this seems to be his svara, that by doing so, by giving to many aniyim, it strikes him that that would be a better accomplishment, because through doing that, you have sustained, he says, that when it comes to Purim time, and you have an obligation of matanos lavyonim, and you could just give one huge sum to one ani, or give a little bit to many aniyim, it strikes him as pretty much self-evident that you should give to many aniyim, because he writes, through that, you will have sustained many different aniyim. Avi?
What about in the Magen Avraham, when it talks about the same aniyim or so, no, it says when aniyim are giving aniyim, they should split it up. Is that the same? Is that from the same concept? Or?
It might be related. You have to figure out exactly, you know, what point he's building on. That also is a reference to a fascinating sugya in the South as Megillah in the context of Shlach Manos, which also we'll try to expand on a little bit. But is the, you want to comment on that?
How can you assess like the good, like the utilization of like giving a large sum to one person as opposed to a smaller sum to many people? Like, how can you make that calculation?
I mean, how do you know how it will actually be used?
I'm saying, like, how can you say that, how can you make a definitive statement that there will be more good will come out of giving to several people as opposed to giving a larger sum to one person?
I mean, how can we actually assess the, you know, count up the, you know, it's interesting, you know, the moral philosophers talk about this, you know, some of the philosophers are trying to figure out what's moral and what's not, so they have different versions of how they say this. They talk about whether it's happiness, that's the ultimate goal of the world, or benefit. Talk about utils, that you said. You know, they had them trying to measure different points, basically, you know, kind of assign a point system to, okay, there's certain degrees of happiness, and if I take this action, it will increase happiness in the world by this many points, because a number of people got a few points, or one person got a lot of points. It's not an easy calculation to make, which is a part of the whole difficulty of this whole area of halacha. But his assumption is that if you're going to allow somebody to be better off because of your gift, so better you should do this to a lot of people rather than one person. So to him, that's a self-evident benefit. Tamir?
So it's pretty much saying if you come down to quality versus quantity, quantity is better than quality.
Yeah, except that which the Rambam and the Bach are both saying.
Right.
But what's interesting is that they seem to be saying it for different reasons. And this is what really flows directly from what we were talking about last week. That it reflects that we have in Chesed and Staka probably two different points of perspective. That we want to do Chesed because it helps people. And we want to do Chesed because every act of generosity is a Matati Odei, is an act of Halachta Bedrachav, and makes us into better people. So the Rambam is focused on the second one. The Rambam is focused on the fact that it makes you into better people, while the Bach is focused more on the recipients, that he's expressing essentially his economic theory, and it's basically a Svara-based conclusion, but that his economic theory is that the world is better off when Staka is more evenly distributed, even if it means no one person is getting a huge payoff. So that's, therefore, more productive, more beneficial. It's a subjective assessment, but essentially that's the assessment he makes. So if we want to help people more, this is the better way to help people. So it seems like the Bach and the Rambam are saying the same thing, maybe, but for different reasons. The Rambam's coming from a halacha b'drachah perspective, And the Bach is coming from a V'ahavta l'recha kamocha perspective. Now, are they really the same? Can you imagine some nafkaminas l'halacha between the two? Hi.
Well, if you have a smaller sum of money that if you disperse to several neim, it wouldn't be a significant amount to help them. Where, as opposed to if you want money, you could actually make a difference. So according to the Rambam, you should still disperse the money because it's l'halacha v'drachav.
So I wonder about that. I'm not sure about that. That's an interesting question. That if you're really going to dilute it so much that you're not really helping anybody, so would the Rambam say? I don't think so. See, it's an interesting point when we talk about, and this is going to come up throughout the sugya, tzedakah, de machzor, and other related topics. This is going to be a constant theme. So it seems like we have these two different values of maximizing your godliness and helping people, and that they go in parallel tracks. Most of the time, 80% of the issues, they'll take you to the same place. Sometimes, as we see, it'll take you to slightly different places. Sometimes there'll be an action which will serve one goal but not the other. That'll either make you more godly-like or help more people, but won't do both. Sometimes they'll be at odds with each other. Right? Sometimes you won't be able to, serving one will hurt the other. So my sense is, and we'll see if this is always the case, that ideally, we'll be accomplishing both goals. Sometimes a decision will be driven more by one than by the other. But hopefully they shouldn't be actually at odds with each other and actually hurting each other. So were it to be true that giving these negligible gifts is beneficial from the Matatio Dei perspective, which maybe is arguable, but were it to be true, if it really resulted in not helping anybody because the gifts are so small, I don't think anybody would say that would be the approach to take. You really have to sacrifice one of the goals for the other. It's hard to imagine that that's the mahala. We could emphasize one more than the other, and we'll have these cases where only one of them is being served, but to make one suffer is a question. It's also a question we talked about last week. I gave that example of the story of the chassid with Bikur Cholim, where the chassid wanted to visit his rabbi, and the rabbi said it's not a good time, and the chassid kept saying that he wants to be mekayim the mitzvah. So on the one hand, that seems to be also a tension between v'halachta b'drachav and v'halachta recha kamocha, that v'halachta b'drachav is he wants to do the mitzvah for his own personal advancement, his own personal development, so he wants to do a mitzvah b'gricholim, but as far as v'halachta recha kamocha, the patient wasn't interested in being seen. So on the one hand, it's a tension between the two, but you could also ask, is it even v'halachta b'drachav, that if the action is so separated from any benefit, then maybe it's not even the chesed that even counts for your own advancement. So too here, if you're doing it in such a way that mamish, you're so focused on the benefit it gives to you that it does nothing for the other person, I'm not sure if it's even beneficial to you. So we have to figure out exactly how to benefit those. But I think there are at least two other ways where there might be a difference between the two. Shmuley?
I was going to say maybe if you knew one honey was going to make very good use of the money, or he was going to do something more extraordinary with it, maybe the Bach would suggest to give it to him or to whoever would be more, make a better use of the money.
That's an interesting question, which is also going to be beyond this step. How do we factor in other types of issues? I try to make it simple by saying, let's say it's only a question of everybody is basically the same. All you have, let's say, it's kind of a fictional world where you have exactly 10 aniyim in your city and they're all equally worthy, equally poor, everything else is equal. So the only question is, do you divide your money up into 10 parts or do you do it all to one person? Once you start introducing the other factors, things certainly do become more common, but it's interesting. I'm actually thinking of two other points. I guess Sammy first and Tamir.
Maybe a possible outcome would be if you're an extremely wealthier and time-constrained person, you have somebody else distributing.
What was the word after wealthy, sir?
Oh, time-constrained. I was going to say that the point is if you have appointed somebody to get out all the stuff before you, so you're not directly involved in it.
Okay, so that is one of the things I was thinking of, actually thinking about it from the other perspective. But the other side of that question, that what if, and this is one of the things I was alluding to a few minutes ago, what if it's not your money? Let's say you are in charge of a tzedakah fund. Right? So you are dispersing money that's already been collected by other people, from other people. So then you could say that it's not really legitimate for you to make your decisions based on your spiritual development. When it's your own tzedakah, so then the discretion is such that yes, you can factor this into how you make a decision. But if you've been appointed by the community, by others, to make these decisions, so presumably you have to focus more on the quasi-objective factors. Say quasi because it's still discretionary. Again, it's still going to be based on your subjective evaluation. But presumably we have to be closer to objectivity when it's on behalf of the Tzibur. So the idea that I could do something driven by my desire to give myself a spiritual high, but to improve my own spiritual development, when I'm acting on behalf of the Tzibur, is probably less true. And then I would probably have to be focused more on something which is closer to objective, such as how do people benefit more rather than what does it do for me? Tamir, is that what you were saying?
Not really. I was just going to say, if a guy is an usher who commonly even got a lot of money, so for him to give out a lot wouldn't really affect him so much, as according to the Malach and Drachav, I mean, wouldn't make such a difference on him.
It's also part of the overall balance, right? Saying that the Rambam's point maybe shifts when somebody has a lot of other chassadim going on, so then maybe he has the right to say that this particular decision is not going to factor in as heavily as far as the desire to engage in more acts of chesed, because they have that other way. So the Rambam's basic point is that you're kind of balancing your spiritual development, and what should that be balanced against? So the point is well taken. What's another possible difference that might be between the two? One pretty big one that that might emerge from the two. What if you're going to give to one person no matter what? Right? The Rambam might still say that there's a benefit to giving to that one person in multiple gifts, while the Bach would say that that's pointless. If it's all going to go to the same person anyway, so then you might as well do it all in one check. But for the Rambam, every act of giving is significant, and therefore it's also accomplishing more in terms of this midah of chesed. Now, to go back,
in the cases like there's only one poor person in the town,
yeah, let's say you know you're going to give the person to, you're going to give the money to one person. The Rambam focusing on an act of giving would say still perhaps that there's a value to multiple gifts rather than one big gift. However, that goes back also to the point we were mentioning a few minutes ago, that if you're doing this in
a
way that... Right, so the question, if you're doing this in a way that irritates the person, you know, if you're doing this, you got to make him come back extra times and you're imposing on him, so then you're going to go back to that point of where you're trading off his benefit for your benefit, right? Theoretically, so maybe it's more of a theoretical question than a practical question. It's hard to imagine, I guess, doing this in a way that doesn't irritate the person. But,
I guess you could hear it, like, you know, you're supporting the guy for his rent and for his food needs. So you could say, you know, at the beginning of the month, I'll give you for your food needs. I mean, you can arrange it away.
Yeah, you could probably come up with an afkamina, or let's say somebody wants to make an online donation to Tzedakah. So instead of making the $1,000 donation to make $100 a day for the next 10 days, maybe the Rambam would say that's more beneficial, perhaps. Okay, there is in general, so halacha l'maisa, if you saw, so there is a statement that Gemara has in the Maseches Erevin, which kind of reflects the Bach's consideration, that the Gemara says that Hanosin kol matanosov l'kohen echad, the Gemara Erevin daf samach gimel, that when you have an obligation to give matnas kahuna, when you have the gifts that have to be given to the kohen, but if you give them all to one Kohen, so the Gemara has a statement that Mariv Esolam, that that person essentially starved the world, that he brings famine upon the world. What's it basically saying? It's saying that this is inefficient economic policy, that to give out all the gifts to one recipient and to not worry about some kind of equitable distribution is going to create a situation of famine. That's not productive. So if you want to make sure that society is well tended to, so you should give things out a little bit more equitably. You shouldn't give everything to one person. So the Shulchan Aruch does record this principle, if you had a chance to see, that it's better not to give everything to one recipient, but to spread it out. And the Maharsham has a tshuva where he writes that he assumes this means over the long term, that sometimes... I used to do this in Shem many years ago, if you collect stucco, let's say you have projects, so you say that in Shvat you're going to give all your money towards one thing, And then in Adar, you're going to give all your money towards something else. So the Maharsham assumes that that would be acceptable. He thinks he means that in the long term, that overall, that somebody who gives all of his stock to one recipient and neglects other reasonable and proximate causes is missing something. It's not necessarily contributing the way he could be to the financial stability of the world. Okay, so those are points which reflect, again, this dual track that we find in Staka, and that influences one of the major preliminary decisions that comes up in terms of how you're going to give. Rebecca Kamenetsky points out, Rebecca Kamenetsky, they have a number of svarim called Emes Liakov, so the Sefer and Chumash is probably the most well-known, but he has many other svarim under that title and different types. So one, there's a couple of Maseftas where there's an Emes Liakov, and there's also notes on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Emes Liakov, the notes on the Shulchan Aruch. So he notes also, to go back to the point of a Staka Gabbai, so Staka Gabbai has a couple of additional responsibilities. It really is interesting the way the decisions kind of flip sometimes between an individual and somebody representing the tzibur. So in addition to the fact that he has to be objective rather than focus on his own personal proclivities, but he also has to appear objective. Why is that?
You don't want people saying that he's a bad guy. You know?
Right, and what would be the consequences of that if they say that?
They don't feel like their tzedakah is being given to the right place, they won't give tzedakah.
Oh, exactly, right. So part of the obligation of the gabbai tzedakah is to cultivate the donors, that is to make sure that as much stock is donated in the first place. So not only does he have to collect it and give it out responsibly, but he wants it to be perceived as equitable so that people who donate to the fund will be encouraged to donate further. So that's an additional obligation that the gabbai tzedakah has. So this is one of the points that Yaakov makes, that not only does he have to have a good system as far as how he gives it out, and not only does that system have to be more objective if it's not his money, but it also has to be perceived as efficient in order that people will donate more, so there'll be more money for tzedakah.
Does that make a difference whether it's the same person that's fundraising and giving out, or no?
It's all a complex web, but to whatever extent you are able to affect the perception, it's going to give to more people giving, so then it's relevant. So if you are actually the collector, or if you're the person who people perceive as the one who's making the decisions, in any event, the way that, to the extent that you influence other people's giving, it's going to be a relevant consideration. Okay, so that's one of the major facts, one of the major decisions. Before you talk about anything else, so you could talk about the question of diversification or concentration. Should you, even if you had every other decision set and you knew what kind of people you were giving to and what kind of causes you were giving to and who your target recipients are, question of whether it should be all equally or one big splash, that's probably the first question to consider. Second question will defer because it's really the question of how do you factor in day machzoro. So that's our Gemara, so that we'll pick up with tomorrow. So to skip that question for a second. So now let's talk about the question of choosing between individuals. So before, you know, questions of causes, which I don't know if we'll get to today or not, but let's say you have to choose. Let's say you decide, okay, you're going to give to poor people. And now you have a number of poor people in the town. So how do you decide what poor person to give to first? So what's the highest priority? What's the first consideration, Shmuley?
Is it like need-based, whoever needs the most money?
So that's an interesting question. How does need factor in? It is probably very relevant. So that's a kind of a sidetrack, that there are certain questions that address, first, let's say if we assume that everybody was equally needy, how do you choose? The assumption that equally needy is a criterion is not so obvious. Many do assume like that. Many do assume that all of the discussions of people is based on comparable needs, on tzorchos shavos, but it seems, we'll see as we see more details, there's probably some kind of a balance, which also goes to the subjectivity. That no one, for example, in your own life, right? So probably, let's say, the poorest people in the world are living in Africa, maybe. So is anyone you know giving all of their money to people in Africa, to the poorest people in the world? Probably not, right? We've made some other adjustments. You're giving some of your money there, but you're assuming that there are other factors. So let's assume for a moment that the needs were comparable, because it's kind of a tricky moving target, and then see how would you decide within that? So who's up first? And who's Zavi up first? Okay, sorry. How do you prioritize between competing and...
your parents go first?
Yes. Okay, so the first priority is relatives. Right? Your immediate family is that which comes first. And here, again, it's fascinating that this is one of the issues which totally flips between whether you're talking about your money or somebody else's money. That this priority to your relatives only applies to somebody who's giving out his own money. When giving out your own money, that's got to go to relatives first. If you're giving out public money, so then you're not allowed to prioritize your relatives. And the Gemara suggests that this is a spiritual risk that comes along with being a Gabbai Tzedakah. That the Gabbai Tzedakah is criticized in one place in the Gemara for his general misdeeds. What does he do wrong? He prioritizes his relatives. And so here it's a fascinating example. These two tracks of your personal money versus the communal money. This is one area where it's not just there's a difference, but it's the opposite halacha between whether it's your money or somebody else's money. Your money, you're obligated to prioritize your relatives, and somebody else's money, you are forbidden to prioritize your relatives.
Does that fit into the responsibility to be equitable? So he seems like he's not being equitable, and people like, oh, he's just going to give to his family, or is that...
It's both. It's both about perception and about actuality. Right, that, yes, you want it to be perceived as equitable so people will continue to give and not think that it's because you're in charge of giving to your family members. But also, even if nobody was watching it, it's inherently wrong, because if you have this responsibility of trying to give out this money with some type of a, like I said before, quasi-objective, because it's not going to be the same answer for everybody, but it'll be quasi-objective, so then the fact that you personally have a nitiya towards this person, it's hard to justify that as a objective reason to give to this ani as opposed to other ani. I think Michael was up first.
So how do you find one's mishpacha or relatives that come first? Is it referring to Krovim? Is it referring to all cousins?
Yeah, so for now it's referring to biological Krovim. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it goes to a list, if you actually had to rank every single person in your family, who is the closest, who's the second closest, who's the third closest. But for now, we'll say that it should start with your closest family member, and then go in a circle, you know, to whoever your brothers come before, your cousins, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, a lot to say about that. We'll come back to that point. Hi, right, sorry.
The Gabbai Tzedakah, is he allowed to give his family after... other aniyim are attended to, or he cannot give...
He's allowed to give to his family with all the other aniyim, that he can, in fact, he can give to his family equally. But the concern is that he's going to prioritize his family, and that he's going to give to his family at the expense of the other aniyim. He shouldn't leave his family out, you know, that he should give to everybody equally. But we're afraid that he's going to prioritize his family, and that's where the Gemara has that criticism. So it's a fascinating halacha that it has this dual... track has opposite conclusions. Now, let's think about this for a second. Why should you prioritize your family? Why? Why does it make a difference? Why should you give your relatives before others? Shmuley?
I was going to say your parents, you have to keep an eye on age.
Okay, that might be one reason. Anything else? Yes, Michael?
In a survivalist manner, say your family is more likely to look out for you. And
so basically it's kind of mutuality that you help them, right? Which is perhaps, you know, a little bit implicit in some of the principles of an Adam Chaver that we have. It's a little bit more of a complex thought that is he sounds, the way you say it sounds a little bit very functional, that you want them to be there for you and therefore you should be there for them, which is, there's an element of that. We can probably phrase it a little bit more nobly that you have an obligation to be there for others, with a priority to those who are most obligated to you. It is true also, as Soloveitchik would note, that the Torah says, when the Torah says you should give tzedakah, kilo yechdal ha'evyon mikarev ha'aretz, that there's never going to be an end to poverty in the world. And that he understood that the idea is you can't ever imagine that no matter how rich you might be, and no matter how much of an empire you may have, that you may think, okay, I'm always in the giver position, and everyone else is perhaps in the recipient position. But ultimately, there's always cycles in the world, and that your family, maybe it'll be many generations down the line, will ultimately also need stuck in, that there is this kind of mutual cycle here. So you help others, and they help you, and that's perhaps what the Torah is getting at. So there's an element of that. Certainly it's built into the mentality of tzedakah, and perhaps there's some truth that that plays a role here as well. All right?
Perhaps because you know your family fairly well, and so mm-hmm. you can know if they actually deserve it or if they don't deserve it.
All right, that's an interesting question. You know, so to what extent should you say that since there's some kind of merit-based cheshbon, which is going to be part of our sugging subis, so maybe I should make my decisions based on, you know, like the question of the guy who said he lost his keys and he's looking into the streetlight for his keys, and the person says, so you dropped them somewhere over here? And he says, no, I dropped them down there, but the light is better over here. Right? So it doesn't make sense to look over here just because the light is better. But sometimes it does make sense. You know, sometimes if there's one area where you have greater access to information, so that's itself a reason to focus your attention there, because you can make more educated decisions in that context than you could somewhere else, even though somewhere else may be equally worthy, but your ability to do so with greater exposure in this way is a reason to prioritize it. It's an interesting story too. Abby?
Could be for the same reason, like inheritance, like why?
It'll come back to you, you mean?
The same reason why you inherit your family's stuff and not random.
Let me say, whatever svara there is for inheritance should be a... that's interesting. The svara for inheritance is interesting. Try to figure out what that means. You could probably make a couple of different approaches. I saw, actually, just a few weeks ago, with some who write, Al-Qidara HaShkafu, that the idea of inheritance is that the child takes over the avoda of the father. So everything the father has is there to be part of his spiritual mission in this world. So when the father passes away, so the son takes up the mission, so therefore he takes up his stuff also in order to be able to carry that out. So does that have any connection to the stock obligation? Maybe. We have to figure that out. Certainly, practically speaking, we do find that Yerusha is a standard for determining relationships and for determining how we see who's closest. So to that level, at least superficially, it's definitely true.
Just a quick understanding. When it said by... I forgot where it said that you get to your family first, I forgot where who said it, but it's also said that by Torah and for women for teaching good deeds, it was a little bit of a different requirement to tzedakah than the standard. Mm-hmm. Tzedakah was even, it seemed that priority to send your kid to yeshiva or whatever it was more of a priority than giving to someone like Tom Clay or something like that.
Right, so that point, the different causes, that would add up to you. That'll have to figure out separately how the different causes. But here, just let's say we had decided everybody was an Ani and everybody was equally poor, so which equally poor Ani would we give first? So that's a part of it. Right?
So it could be an artificial prioritization, that if everyone was focusing on family and it was ever widening circles of mm-hmm. helping, then everyone should be helped, everyone will be gotten to.
Which is not so artificial. We mentioned that at the beginning as something that's probably inherent in the system, right? That we want people to have different answers. We want different donors to have a different list of priorities, because that way you can hope that there will be more attention given to different people. So the fact that you have a list of preferences and Ben has a different list of preferences is a good thing for the viability of the overall system. I think there is a lot of truth to that. So I think that the different suggestions we've seen in the past few minutes also illustrate an important dynamic here in Stockton and the interaction at different levels. That on the one hand, you could say that the prioritization is a function maybe of Yahatla Recha Kamocha, like you were saying, that we want to help people, and by having this system of prioritization, that itself will lead to more people being helped, because we'll kind of divvy up the responsibility among different families and different people who are in a position to help. It could be essentially a Yahatla Recha Kamocha area, or it could be a halakha, but draw from a slightly different sense. In other words, it could be about your personal obligations in a different way. Not because you'll help more people, but because there are other things you need to do for your spiritual well-being. So somebody mentioned before kibud av eim. Right? So let's say if we're talking about a parent, so kibud av eim is perhaps, yes, and certainly fulfilled by supporting a needy parent. So that's not really a tzedaka priority, but it's something that still could influence your tzedaka decisions. That if through your tzedaka you are accomplishing some parallel mitzvah goal, which is personalized for you, that may also be a reason why you will make a decision in that direction. So that's also a part of this chakir, essentially. When you choose one path, you might choose it for yahav tzarecha kamocha reasons, or you might choose it for reasons of your spiritual development, which have other components to it. It's not just kibud av eim, but the 90 points of the pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya, Mibsorcha al tisalim, that the Gemara highlights as a value that it's right for a person to feel close to his family and for a person to feel obligations to his family. So the pasuk Mibsorcha al tisalim means one should not hide himself from his family, Mibsorcha, that if a family member is in need, so it's right to feel a responsibility towards that. So that's a personal kind of fulfillment. But maybe that's also a way in which some of these decisions get made. So this kind of illustrates a fascinating point about how this plays out. Just a little bit, Alpi Derech HaDrush, it's also interesting that there is a medrash that in Parshas Chayisara, so in the beginning of Parshas Chayisara, so we know that Avram buries his wife Sara, who dies. He performs the chesed of Kvura, and there is a medrash there that says that when he did this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaimed, "Oh, Avram Avinu, you did this chesed, tafasta esumenosai. You have now chopped my craft." And the God is God of chesed, and he wants his creations to imitate chesed. Avram, now you got it. Right, so this is the other half of what we discussed in last week. Last week we talked about Parshas Vayera, the beginning of Parshas Vayera, illustrating Avram's halachta b'dracha. Now this is about the beginning of Parshas Chayisara, the next Parsha. So God says, "Now you chapter." What do you mean, "Now you chapter"? Here, a whole life of chesed, and everything Avram does is chesed. The chesed of burying his wife, that's the most impressive. Isn't that what anybody would do? Right? Wouldn't any decent husband bury his wife? It's actually, we spoke about it the last semester, it's actually a din in the Sefer Ksubis, to what extent the husband is obligated in the kavura of his wife. But certainly from an emotional or chesed perspective, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing you would praise somebody for. I guess it's as if it's above and beyond such an unusual type of, what about chesed? He actually provided for his wife's funeral. You can't imagine anybody saying that. So what does it mean to say that Avraham Avinu is praised specifically for this chesed? A lifetime of chesed, but this was it. He buried his wife. Wow, what about chesed? So some suggest that maybe it has to do with the chesed of kavura, the whole chesed shel emes component. That might be one possibility. But there's another suggestion that the altar of Slobodka had, that it has to do with this whole idea of prioritizing relatives. That there is this halacha, both within chesed and tzedakah, that you have to prioritize those closest to you. And that means that that's the biggest chesed. And it has to work against somewhat of a Yetzirah, that it's very easy sometimes to be drawn in by the lure of Davka, the chesed that's farther away. Right? That seems like it's more unusual, and that seems like it's going to get more attention, and that's what gets you honored, and gets the plaques, and gets people praising you. And the truth is, Alfi Halacha, that the chesed starts with those closest. And in order to emphasize that, so that's what this Medrash is saying, that as much as no one's going to give you a testimonial dinner or a plaque for taking care of your immediate family members, so one should not forget that that not only is that also a chesed, but that's the first address of chesed. And that's the first, and that's also one of the Marmakomos I saw last week, where I was talking about stalker for one's immediate family, one's children, that as much as there is a question to what extent you're obligated to support your children, but certainly as far as chesed is concerned, so they come first in the list, that's the most basic chesed, even though no one's going to say, wow, what a tzaddik, he pays for his kids. that you're not going to get any kind of external kavod, but the priorities of chesed start there. Now, there are many other factors to consider. I think we're just about up to the time we said with Daven Mincha, so let me just recap and then we'll discuss how this will play out in the next few days. So, what we said so far is we discussed the question of how should you diversify or concentrate, should you give one big gift or many smaller gifts. We saw that the Rambam says that you should give many small gifts because each one has an impact on your neshama, apparently focusing on the Matati Odei kind of swara, while the Bach says you give many small gifts because the world will be better off, apparently focusing on every half Lorecha Kamocha kind of consideration. There were those like Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Maharal who disagreed completely and said give the big gift, but it seems to be more focused on the diversification idea. The Shulchan Aruch does, based on the Gemara and Erevin, say you shouldn't give all your gifts to one place because that brings about famine. But Masham and others note that that's assuming it's probably over a long course of time, but to have focused projects 1 month at a time or so should be okay. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky pointed out that if you're a Gabbai Tzedakah, so then you have a bigger need for transparency and public objectivity so that people will give more to the fund. And in general, the Gabbai Tzedakah is an example of where you'll prioritize more the Gehaz L'Orecha Kamocha rather than the Halachta B'drachav, while the personal Tzedakah you can focus on the Halachta B'drachav. And also the question, if you're going to give to the same person anyway, should you give multiple gifts? So if you could do that without hurting that person, so maybe the Rambam would say that Kedai, while the Bach probably wouldn't find too much benefit in that. Then we talked about the idea that we've been individuals, so relatives are the highest priority, and we saw that here's a way in which it flips, that the personal tzedakah, the relatives are the highest priority, while the communal tzedakah fund, you're not allowed to prioritize your relatives, so the halacha is actually the opposite. And we discussed why it should be, you should prioritize your relatives. We had a couple of interesting svaras, either because this is the most efficient system, if people who take care of their relatives first, so hopefully everyone's families and everyone's relatives will have the most people taken care of in a diverse way, or maybe because of spiritual development reasons, whether it's kibud avim, whether it's halachta b'drachav, whether it's your own self-preservation, there are other tracks in order to prioritize tzedakah for that reason. There's another major element here, which we'll have to get to probably next Sunday. We'll try to say some of the other elements. But as we mentioned, we kind of skipped over the faction of Dei Machzoro, and that's because we'll get into that tomorrow. So tomorrow, God willing, we'll start with the Gemara a little bit more inside to discuss how the Gemara tells us the principles of Dei Machzoro back and forth, and how does that impact on the practicality of this question and of the theory of understanding the whole concept. So God willing, we will pick up with that tomorrow. In terms of Marmachomos tomorrow, so there's someone finished the list from last week? That's accurate? So I'll give probably a new list tomorrow, even though we have to discuss the Makoros from last week. One of the things I'll do is put on the Makoros that we talked about last week. If you want to see them inside, the ones that we did, I'll give a list for that so you'll understand if they seem familiar.